Hearing is Fulweiler versus Archon Group.
Morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Sean Malcolm. I represent Plaintiff Fulweiler. I reserve 2 minutes, Your Honor. Your Honor, my client, Deborah Fulweiler, filed a lawsuit after she fell at some stairs at Bellevue College. I call them the vanishing stairs because they're made of this congregate cement that, under certain light conditions, sort of has a camouflage effect. And she also, so she sued the property owner and the occupier that of the stairs.
Now, your statement, though, that's based on what? Is that based on the expert testimony?
It's based on her declaration, her deposition, and the expert testimony. She, in her
And which one of the experts says that?
Well, both of the experts, Your Honor, say that.
Okay, and how are these stairs any different than the stairs outside One Union Square?
Well, a number of ways. First of all, they have this effect under certain lighting conditions that cause a camouflage effect. They
also wouldn't that be true of all aggregate stairs?
I'm not sure. I don't know. All I know is that my experts came in, did a number of measurements, and they both came to this conclusion based on luminosity values, based on their observations of the area. They also observed that the stairs had building code defects and also didn't meet a standard, that the handrails didn't meet an ATSM standard. So there were a number of different issues of material fact to be raised in the two experts' declarations. Your Honor, at oral argument in the trial court, counsel raised the issue of the cyber case. And that's a case where it's a case about speculative causation. It doesn't apply in this case at all. In the cyber case, Carol Cyber was walking along a boardwalk looking at the merchandise of a retailer, and she fell down some stairs beside the boardwalk. But the retailer didn't have any control or ownership over the boardwalk. She sued the retailer and alleged defects on the boardwalk, but she at no time ever alleged any defects on the merchandise, the merchandise display of the retailer. The other thing that Carol Cyber did that was different from Ms. Fulweiler, who sued the proper parties, is that Cyber did not remember any of the specifics of her fall. She said, if everything had been right, I wouldn't have fallen. That's not what my client said. My client indicated in her deposition testimony that she looked down and she couldn't see where to place her feet, and she followed that up with a declaration that was not inconsistent, that indicated, how that process worked, how when she was stepping down, she looked down, the stairs vanished, and then followed that up with two more expert declarations that fleshed that out, raised genuine issues of material fact about whether there were building code violations and whether the handrails met a standard. So in this case, Your Honor,
how did the handrail contribute to her fall?
She raised an issue of fact about her balance. She reached for the handrail. It didn't meet the standard of how high handrails are supposed to be off the ground, and she indicated that caused her to lose balance because she is an overweight woman and she puts a lot of...
It didn't meet the building code?
It's called an ATSM standard. It's not exactly a building code. It's an international standard of safety, essentially.
Is that independent from the building code?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe so. So... Your Honor,
is there an obligation for the landowner to retrofit to those standards established anywhere in law?
No, I don't believe there's an obligation to retrofit to the standard.
Why are they applicable?
Well, they're applicable because they raise genuine issues of fact about whether or not the stairs created a dangerous condition.
When were the stairs built?
About 20, 30 years ago. Based on my recollection,
is the code that your experts referenced, was that in effect at the time these
were built? Yes, they referenced the original code in the 70s with respect to the building code violation. Your Honor, counsel overinterprets this issue about the mechanism of fault. I don't believe that Washington law requires a plaintiff to know exactly how, you know, where their foot was when they slipped on the ice, or you know, how a car hit them when they got hit by a car. I mean, she knows that she fell because she looked down and lost sight of the stairs, and she fell. And counsel's going to tell you that she has to know exactly where her foot was and all this type of stuff. I don't see any support in Washington law that says it. The expert concluded that the stairs created a hazardous condition. That's admissible under Davis versus Baugh Industries, which held that a trial court erred in striking portions of an expert's declaration that stated that a pipe created a hazardous condition in the same way.
Was your client an invitee or a licensee?
Well, she's clearly an invitee, Your Honor. I mean, at the very least, there's issues of material fact about it, but she came to the school to help her friend register, and then they both went to the bookstore. So there was a business purpose there.
Does it matter whether she bought anything or not?
Does not matter. No, there's a case directly. I think it's comment F to the, based on comment F to the restatement that says that a person does not have to make a purchase. A window shopper is an invitee. You know, you don't have to make a purchase. So without further questions, I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal.
Yes, may it please the court, Greg Wallace for the ownership defendants, respondents. We agreed to split our time. I'll take 6 minutes, and sorry about that. Counsel for Bellevue Community College will take 4 minutes. And so I'll address primarily the causation issue. Counsel for the Bellevue Community College will address the licensee and invitee issue. Starting with Ms. Fulweiler's deposition, she was asked very clearly about her fall. Were you in the process of stepping down? Did you misstep? What exactly happened? She said repeatedly, I don't know. I asked her, do you know where your feet were? I don't know. Do you know if it was your right foot, left foot? I don't know. And I asked her, do you have any recollection of what happened to you physically, meaning the mechanism of your fall? I do not, was her response. Based on this testimony, that Ms. Fulweiler, the appellant here, did not know what happened and what caused her fall.
Isn't that about more about how she fell as opposed to why she fell?
She doesn't know how she fell. All she does
is... Did she say that the steps blended together?
She said she didn't necessarily say that, Your Honor. She said very simply, I couldn't see the stairs. I believe that was her deposition testimony.
That she could hardly see one step from the other?
She didn't actually say that either. Her deposition testimony...
I think she did. That's the quote from the deposition.
Okay. I thought it was simply that she couldn't see the stairs. Regardless, her deposition testimony is at Clerk's Papers 121 through 119. But based on the issue, based on her lack of knowledge about how she actually fell or what caused her to fall, the respondents moved for summary judgment. In response to the summary judgment motion, Ms. Fulweiler produced three declarations, one her own declaration, and then two declarations from two different, or one declaration each from an expert, Baird and Sloan. It's our position, obviously, that the trial court's dismissal of this case should be affirmed, that there is, that these declarations that were submitted in response to our summary judgment motion did not create any issue of fact, and we would ask that this court affirm that decision. This is a classic case of speculation. As this court knows, a speculative theory about how an incident could have occurred or might have occurred is insufficient to overcome a summary judgment motion. And the issue here is causation. A causal connection between respondents' actions and the alleged injury must not be left to surmise, speculation, and conjecture. So, you know, Ms. Fulweiler does not know what happened. That's her deposition testimony. Faced with a motion to dismiss, she comes up with a theory about what could have happened. This is how it happened. I don't know, but now that my case is going to be dismissed, this is what happened. And so essentially, and then in her declaration in support of her response brief, she says very clearly, and I'm reading, this is at Clerk's Papers 208, I grasped the handrail, and as I My foot was in motion leaving the first step. I naturally looked down for clues about where to place my foot on the next step. That is totally contradictory. I asked her repeatedly in her deposition about this. I specifically asked her in her deposition, were you stepping down? She said, I don't know. Do you know where your feet were at her deposition? I don't know. So we know under Klontz versus Puget Sound Power and Light and Kumfeld versus Baseline Link that you cannot create a genuine issue of fact by submitting a subsequent declaration after your deposition testimony that clearly contradicts what you've said under oath. So we go from there to the first expert, Baird, who is nothing but a string of conclusional statements that these stairs are unreasonably dangerous as a matter of law and so forth. And as Your Honor's pointed out, these stairs are no different than any of the stairs near the convention center or outside the front doors here and so forth. So as a matter of law, these stairs are not unreasonably dangerous. So, and they come up with this theory that had this, had the stairs been painted yellow at the nose, I wouldn't have happened. And that's why we cited the cyber case. That was exactly the same theory in that case. But that is, you know, in the cyber case, it says, if everything had been right, I wouldn't have fallen. That is very similar to the analysis here by the appellants, that this is just a could-have theory, a speculative theory. So in essence, this is simply a classic Marshall v. Bally's case. You know, this is the woman on the treadmill. If you don't know what happened, you can't create some theory afterwards. Without some information about how the incident happened or why it happened, it is inappropriate and completely, you know, to infer negligence on one of the respondents or the defendants. So, in short, there's just, you know, in Marshall, which relied also on the seminal case of Gardner, it was mere conjecture that a defect could have caused the fall. In those cases and here, absent any direct evidence about what in fact caused the fall, an assertion that a defect was a proximate cause amounts to one possible theory of how the injuries were sustained. That's exactly what happened here, and that is exactly the kind of case that cannot go to a jury because they're being asked to speculate. Lastly, just two other quick points. There was no notice under the Ingersoll versus DiBartolo case. I mean, this is being used by Bellevue Community College, many students every day. There's been no other fall at this location. And then lastly, this court can rule as a matter of law. The pictures are submitted as part of the briefing materials. Again, these stairs are no different than the one out front or the ones all over King County. So we would ask that the trial court's dismissal be affirmed. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Susan Edison and I represent Bellevue College in this case. Bellevue College is requesting that this court affirm the trial court's dismissal of Ms. Fulweiler's case because the respondents met the standard of care owed to Ms. Fulweiler. If you look at the standard, the status alleged by both the parties in this case, respondents contend that Ms. Fulweiler was a licensee when she came onto the Bellevue College building. Ms. Fulweiler is claiming that she is an invitee. The information in the record that we have concerning the status of Ms. Fulweiler is first her statement in her deposition that she was simply there that day to show a friend the bookstore. Now, that is contradicted by the evidence that she put in her declaration in the opposition to summary judgment, in which she said that she was actually coming to the bookstore to browse and look for books and perhaps purchase a book if she found one there that interested her. However, she never did actually purchase a book.
Even if she was there accompanying her friend, showing her the bookstore, why isn't that sufficiently indirectly connected to the business of the Bellevue College?
It would be our position that the fact that she's coming on the campus to show her friend the bookstore means that she's entering the premises for her own purposes. And that is the definition of what a licensee is. And the standard of care owed to a licensee by a landowner is to not act willfully or wantonly.
So if a person goes into a business to browse, they're there for their own purposes?
I think that actually then would put her in the category of being an invitee. And I think that was actually the purpose of that declaration and why that statement was put in the declaration,
so
was simply
she,
to change her status to an invitee.
She accompanies a person who is browsing? Is that's inadequate? Is that your point? So if she herself is not browsing, but she's accompanying a person who's browsing, that's insufficient. But if she's browsing herself, then that would be adequate.
That does seem like splitting hairs, doesn't it?
It does.
I think the whole point of if you look at the two distinctions, is that initially when she testified in her deposition, there was nothing about browsing. It was simply showing someone around the campus, or that changed in her declaration. But I think the real point here is whether she's a licensee or an invitee, I think the respondents met their standard of care owed to her. It's clear.
Well, assume it's the higher standard. What's your defense to the causation or the negligent condition?
Well, first of all, we have stairs that are open and obvious. There's no question about that. They're there to be seen. In fact, Ms. Fulweiler herself has gone up and down these stairs several times when she was a student at Bellevue College. Second of all, there's no accident history, which shows that there's a hazard to these stairs. And so the duty that a landowner owes to an invitee is if there is a dangerous condition that they know about or should have known about, that they need to then do something to protect invitees when they come on their property.
You're saying the experts can't raise a question of material fact about unreasonable risk merely through their declarations?
No, I don't believe they can. And
What case are you citing?
Well, I think that's, first of all, they're speculating, and you can't base something on speculation because they're basing their decision on the changed testimony of Ms. Fulweiler that she put in her declaration, which leads us back to the Klontz and the McCormick cases. But second of all, I think that the fact of the matter is when landowners have something that is open and obvious to the public that is there to be seen, that you can't develop a dangerous condition from that. And I think that's the basis of this case from the very beginning, is that there's no accident history on these stairs, nor is there anything deceptive about these stairs. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That leaves 4 minutes on rebuttal. No, he quit 2 minutes early.
He did.
Oh, that's
quit
right.
2 minutes.
Your Honors, these stairs are different from the stairs outside. These stairs are old stairs made 30, 40 years ago, and they're made of a pebbly material that has a camouflaging effect when it blends together. They're not just regular cement stairs like we see all over King County, like we see all over downtown. I've never seen stairs like this.
Camouflaging suggests they all look the same.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got a wooden stairway. All the treads are made from identical wood. They're painted the identical color. They're covered with the identical tile. Don't they all look the same?
The interesting thing is if it was just a plain piece of wood, then I get your point. But if there was wood with, like, lines running through it, that also the lines continued on the next piece of wood underneath it, that could easily create the same type.
Well, there are plenty of tile treads that have lines that run across them, and they're on every single step. You're saying they're not visible. Now, that suggests something more about the lighting than about the construction of the...
I think that's right. My expert, Gary Sloan, measured the lighting, did luminosity value checking and all that.
And was this outdoors?
Yes, it was. It was.
And what time of day?
We tried to match the same time of day, same light season. He talks about that in his declaration as the accident. So the other thing is, this is not a case like Cyber or Marshall. Marshall just flew off a exercise machine and had no idea why she flew off. You know, Your Honor is right that my client, in her deposition, said, I could not hardly tell one step from the other, and that's what I believe, why I fell. And then he says, well, can you tell me about the mechanism of where your feet were? And she says, I don't understand the question, over my objection. So his questions were vague. It's not that she didn't know what the mechanism was or something. It's that he asked these vague questions, and then he continued to ask them, and she said, the only thing I could tell you, I couldn't see the step. But did you keep walking? I fell at that point, the very first step. And she goes on and on in her deposition, you know, emphasizing the same point. It's not just speculation, I just flew off a treadmill. It's, I looked down and I couldn't see the steps and I fell. That's the open and obvious question, Your Honor. I mean, I would just submit that we raised genuine issues of material fact about whether the condition is open and obvious. I mean, it's again, I don't know
it
how.
It also has to be unreasonable.
Right. Well, I guess for that, I would just rely on the expert's conclusions that the condition, with that it was unreasonable for the school to leave this condition in the way it was.
Well, if that was built in 65, was it?
Somewhere around there. Yeah, I don't remember the exact date, but
35, 48 years, and there's no accident history on those stairs?
There's no evidence.
But we have an expert 38 years in that says, oh, these are unreasonably dangerous.
Well, there's no evidence in the record that there was no prior falls.
Was the heart of my question.
Yeah, they're kind of expanding that. I never asked that in interrogatories because I was relying on the constructive notice thing that my experts were saying that they should have at least investigated or, you know, the discovered the condition.
Was there any evidence of inspection of the stairs by anybody who works for one of the defendants?
There was no evidence. They filed a very early summary judgment, and at that time there hadn't been a lot of discovery about whether there had been any prior falls, whether there, you know, any of the questions that Your Honor is getting to. So I did have also one of my experts drew a causal link between the building code violation and in the stairs and my client's injuries. He stated that the violation of the UBC may have been a contributing factor in Deborah Fulweiler's fall on the stairs.
The code when it was constructed in 65?
Yes,
or
right.
The current code?
The old code, the code that applied to the stairs. Yeah. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right.